Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and welcome back to the Story Night podcast. We're so glad you've joined us. And if this is your very first time listening, we recommend checking out episode one, where you can hear a conversation about Story Night, understand its history and purpose and vision. Now, for this episode, I'm so excited that you get to join us to hear my friend Helen tell us her life story. But before we dive in, Helen, would you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Thanks, Jessica. Thanks for having me. My name's Helen. I live here in McMinnville. I've lived here for about 20 years. I've grown up in the area. I'm a nurse. I have three kiddos and we live in the country. So we have goats and chickens and ducks and keep busy with all those things. I own a business right now called Hello Care. We do in-home care for seniors in their homes, for people in this area and beyond.
Well, I'm so glad you were willing to do this. It's kind of a funny story how this all began. We were at a local Chamber of Commerce events that happens once a week called Greeters. And they were talking about something with the local community college. And somebody said, oh, people have stories like Helen. And you happen to be sitting right in front of me. Yeah. Aren't you lucky? Mm-hmm. And then right as we ended, I tapped Helen's shoulder and was like, would you have any interest in telling your story on the podcast? And truthfully, we didn't know each other that well at that point. I mean, we'd seen each other at these mm-hmm. greeters a few times, but you know, my ears perk up anytime somebody says the word story. And since one of the other members there said Helen's story, it's like, oh, I wonder if she'd like to share this story. And then you sent me your outline. And thought, wow, this is a powerful story. It's got a lot of encouragement in here, ladies. So I'm so excited you get to hear this. Before we start with your childhood and go through your story, though, I was hoping you could maybe share why you even agreed to do this. I mean, that was pretty amazing. You answered right away and said, I love sharing my story. And a few days later, here we are sitting down to record. This was really, really quick. So why did you say yes? And why do you think this is important to share stories?
Well, I get to take care of seniors almost every day, and I get to listen to their stories. And I've learned so much from just the lived experience of other people. And there's a lot of things that I've tried and failed at and learned from. And if there's anybody that can listen to my story and maybe find a little path forward for themselves, then I think it's all worth it.
Oh, amen. You said something really powerful before we started recording about information and behavior. Will you tell our listeners that?
Yeah, a saying that we kind of repeat to ourselves often in our office and out loud is, with enough information, all behavior makes sense. And I really love that. So I'm a nurse. We have a team of about 130 caregivers and other nurses that work with us at Hello Care. And given that, the size of that team, we have the opportunity to work with a lot of different people in a lot of different scenarios. And sometimes people behave in ways that we just are mystified by. And that happens in our day-to-day life too, not just at work. But if we take the time to ask the right questions and to listen with empathy, oftentimes we come to a place where we understand why things happened, why people chose to do certain things, whether it's, you know, something that is positive or negative. Understanding where people are coming from, their feelings, their emotions, I think really helps like demystify a lot of different situations for us. So we really want to ask those questions. Mm-hmm. How do we get enough information so this behavior makes sense? And I think that there's a time when a light bulb kind of goes off and our eyes kind of light up and we say, oh, now I understand why this happened. And we almost always get to that place.
Yeah, that's so true. And gosh, what if people actually took the time to do that? It just helps people have a little more grace for humanity, I think.
Right. And that sort of active empathy, I think, helps everybody just calm down. I can see oftentimes when I'm, you know, talking to someone, interviewing them for a potential role at our agency. And once they understand I'm on your side, I want you to do well, they just relax and their true authentic self usually comes out, which is really what I want to see.
And we get to hear your true authentic self for this episode as a perfect segue. Well, let's start with your story and back at the beginning. Will you tell us about your childhood?
Sure. So I grew up in Sheridan on a farm out in Gopher Valley and had a lovely childhood. It was full of, you know, riding horses, which brings up probably emergency room visits and broken arms and all of those kind of near death experiences that a lot of us Gen Xers had, I think. I had a little sister and an older brother, and those relationships, I think, were pretty difficult. Growing up, we were very different people and had not a lot of understanding of how to be a family and how to support each other, kind of growing into our own independent people. I started working pretty early, like a lot of us did. I worked in the berry fields starting when I was 12 and then worked on a farm. And during my time on a farm, I was assaulted by another coworker, a man in his 20s, and was very ashamed about that situation and really blamed myself for that. I think as we tend to do when we have a shameful situation, we kind of start to think about what could I have done differently. And my only sort of solace about it was that I was the only one and that I would keep it a secret. And what ended up happening was that it didn't stay a secret, that the person that had committed the assault did share that with other people. And it ended up being something that a lot of people knew about and became something that was a big source of shame for me and bullying and kind of pretty ugly behavior kind of directed at me. A lot of, you know, slut shaming and ideas about, you know, I should have known better, or, you know, why was I flirting with that person? And of course, I internalized all of that into feeling that I should have known better. But that how that kind of manifested was that I ended up dropping out of high school. I went from being sort of really enthusiastic about school and excited about possibly, you know, where my education would take me, and then just losing all of that motivation and all of that feeling of self-worth after this incident. Part of it was the incident itself, but I think a lot of it was the people's response to it. And to be honest, it was the girls in my life. It was the women in my life that had more of a blaming response to it and sort of attacking me for what had happened. And I was 13. So, you know, I think that now looking back, you know, 30 something years later, the blame was definitely not directed in the right place. But I also am able now to talk about it. This is actually the first time I've ever even told that story ever, because it's such a source of just shame for me, just shame that that happened. And I've always just wanted to keep it quiet and not really talk about it. But it was transformative for me because I didn't go to anybody. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't tell anybody about it. So there was no way for me to process that in a healthy way. It was only me and my teenage brain just trying to keep it quiet and shove my emotions down so that I could just sort of continue.
Survive, function.
Just survive. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Well, and what you're saying is so, people need to hear it. And people also wonder, for anybody who's been a victim of anything, they go, well, why didn't you tell anybody?
Right.
Well, this is why, because our culture is horrible. Like this, you know, there's so much victim blaming.
So much victim blaming.
And there was a time where I went through a training about abuse, and this person was talking about, why does that happen? Especially women to women. Why is it that women tend to victim blame other women who were assaulted, abused, whatever, you know, fill in the blank. And this, of course, isn't, you know, the case for every single person, but this professional was making the point that if something happens to a fellow female, if we accept that it wasn't her fault, then that means it could happen to us also.
Oh,
But if we rationalize it in our mind that she did something to put herself in that position or deserve it or whatever, then we can give ourselves that peace that, oh, it could never happen to me because I wouldn't
Yes, I
be in
would
that place, or
never.
I wouldn't have said that, or I wouldn't da 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 da. And then everything goes back to, we can fit it in our paradigms and our narratives that it's all okay. And I just thought that was such an interesting point that this professional made, that that's often why women victim blame other women.
Women are awful to each other sometimes, and they're wonderful to each other at other times. But we have to recognize that we do have that almost that propensity to victim blame and stop ourselves. What was hard for me and made me absolutely sure that I would never tell anybody was that I didn't think that I could stand up to any types of questioning about, well, you talked to him, didn't you? Well, he talked to you and you smiled back at him. You were polite. We're inviting. And so I think there's normal behavior that in retrospect with intense questioning gets misinterpreted as encouraging. And I never ever thought that I could stand up to any type of questioning. And so of course I never told anybody. When we see statistics about how many, assaults are reported, I understand why they don't get reported, because everybody just wants it to go away. You don't want to think about it. You certainly don't want to be the person that's known for this happening to you. So you just really want to keep it quiet. And I know that was definitely the case with me. But what happened was it completely took my life in another direction that took a solid decade to really get back to where I was before. And even then, I really wasn't where I was before because, it was a decade later and I'd had a lot of different experiences that were related to feeling that shame. But what I do talk about that I think is really positive is that I did have an opportunity to get my GED, that I was able to go to Chemeketa and get out of that a bullying situation that was really made everything so much worse to have just a lot of misunderstanding coming at me all the time about what actually happened. And the danger is that in my mind, it starts to get reframed as what people are telling me actually happened when actually,
That
we
wasn't
all know the
right. Right. Well,
truth.
and if the assaulter was the one controlling the narrative and the one telling, then that's a different ball game.
It really was. For probably a good 15 years, I felt really alone, and I was really alone. I hadn't had such betrayal over this situation, even by close friends, that I just did not really want to have any friends. And it was a really lonely part of my life. I traveled a lot. I would move different places all throughout the country and sleep on people's couches, whoever would just have me, just to try to find a place where I felt like I fit in and I belonged. And what I realized was that I can change where I am, but the consistent thing is me. And the way that I was interacting with the world was very closed off. Of course, it was because I just had this thing happen. But it took years to get over. It took years for me to finally understand that that situation does not represent the world at large.
This podcast is a place where real women share real stories of real hope. That's the key there at the end, right? Because you're being so authentic and sharing a very raw story. And yet your story didn't end there. And it did take a long time. And you're searching and searching, but there did come a kind of a turning point. And part of it sounds like, was Chemeketa Community College giving you that opportunity to finish something and move forward, right?
During that decade, after I got my GED, I knew I wanted to go back to college, and I was working several jobs. I always loved to work, and I always waited tables. I love being a server because I love being on my feet, and I love, interacting with people, and the chaos of a restaurant just always resonated with my brain. And I would go back to Chemeketa, and I would go to class for 2 or 3 weeks, and then that was about how long my confidence would last in my ability to really be a student and transform my life. Something would happen, I'd get a quiz back, or somebody would make an offhand comment to me, and it would just destroy my confidence. So I tried to go back to school, I think 4 or 5 times, and would go and then just disappear and continue at work and continue my life. But that dream of being a student and being something more was really elusive. And finally, I found nursing school, and I thought it kind of sounds like being in a restaurant, like the chaos
You're on your
of you're
feet,
on your
you're working
feet,
with
you're busy, you're
people.
solving problems. I always loved that. I never saw myself as somebody that would work in an office. Just that the calmness of it was not what I was after. But I thought, well, nursing school, that resonates with me and my busyness and my personality and talking to a lot of people and problem solving. So that was what stuck. Is finally, I was 24 when I went back to school, and I met my husband within probably 3 weeks of me going back to school.
So many good things
So many good
all
things.
at once.
Yeah. And then we got married, and kind of the rest is pretty much what my life looks like now. I give Shemekara a lot of credit because Shemekara never closed the door on me and never said, you've tried enough. We
It's
know
not like
you,
three strikes
Helen.
here.
Yeah, we know you. And this seems to be, what your habits are, that you don't really stick with it. And, you're always going to be this way. I never had that experience. Every time I went, it was encouraging and doors were open to me. And that was what I needed. I needed to have chances to fail and learn and go back and try again. That's what community college gave to me, is that opportunity to just get my confidence back. It took a long time for me to see myself as anything different than kind of a not so great person.
Right.
That's what I thought about myself, that my life was going to be couch surfing and serving tables. Not that that's a bad life, but I wanted something different. I wanted something that had more stability, where, I could see myself as a professional.
What a great reminder of what a community college can be.
Yeah.
I think maybe some people just think, oh, that's nice. It's a more affordable option, right? But they don't maybe think of all the other ways that community colleges are really impactful and
Yeah.
meeting people where they're at.
And the doors are open for everybody, no matter what.
Yeah.
You can go to Shemekata or any community college, and you can find your stair step up
Yeah.
in your life. It's very powerful for me because of how I felt about myself when I started and how I felt about myself when I finished. It's a completely different person.
And how long was that period of time from when you really went back and stayed with it until you had your nursing
Yeah,
degree?
it was 4 years. So I started in 01 and I graduated in 05. Yeah, and just transformed. It transformed me into the person that I am. And there was nothing else that I came across that could do that. Not working 8 hours a week, not, all these other things that I had tried, moving here and trying this. But it wasn't until I got an education that I really found out what was possible for me.
Yeah, it opened a lot of doors. And it led you to your husband.
Yeah, that's
Big
right.
bonus.
That's right. And my husband is super. We've been married 20 years. We have 3 kids. He's a paramedic for Portland Fire, so nurse firefighter, right? That's like the most traditional. My kids say it's so cliche. You guys are so cliche. And it is true. It is true. But his support has been really crucial throughout everything that I've done since. I started my first business in 2008. I had had my second son at that point. I convinced him that I was going to start a business, just, work extra overtime for a little while, and then I'll be able to contribute. And 4 years later, I finally did. So kudos to him for being patient. But that was a big transition for all of us, for me going from a nurse that clocks in and clocks out and has a steady paycheck to saying, well, I'm going to be an entrepreneur now. That was a little bit of a transition. And I didn't really know what that journey would look like. I just knew I wanted to create something. I wanted to show my kids and myself that I could sort of make my living off of my own like creativity and hustle. And so I created a product, started my first company. It's called Milkies. And I have a product called Milk Saver, and it's a patented product. And we manufactured it in Taiwan and then brought it over here. And it was this whole wonderful process of learning how to start a company and how to bring a product to market.
Just for anybody who doesn't know what Milkies are, but you know.
Yeah. So the Milk Saver, for anybody that hasn't breastfed before.
I was wondering, I'm like, are we talking about breast milk?
Yeah. Yes, we're talking about breast milk. It's leaky a lot of times. If you've seen people that have a like breast milk on their shirt, it leaks out when you're nursing. And this product collects that milk while you're nursing. So it
so
helps.
Everything is saved.
So everything's, that's why it's called Milk Saver. Yeah. So.
And there's so many women, gosh, we could go into a lot of other stories
oh, yeah.
from here, but so many who, you know, they've got preemies or they, you know, aren't able to nurse for all kinds of reasons. Like that is liquid gold.
Yeah.
That you like one drop spilled is,
it's
you
here.
Literally, it is worth crying over spilt milk when that happens.
Yeah. So you get it. You understand. And that was my first. So when I had Milkies, I would go all over the country and sell our product and promote our product. I became a lactation educator. So I would teach in Babies R Us. For those of you that remember Babies R Us, we used to teach breastfeeding classes there and other places where I would talk to a lot of moms about, you know, they were pregnant and motherhood. And I wrote a blog for about 10 years about breastfeeding. And I learned so much about the experience of motherhood across a lot of different socioeconomic realities and just how we all have that in common, that we all want the best experience for our kiddos and we want to give them the best start in life, and how tough we are on ourselves when we feel like we're not measuring up. And that's, you know, I'm just talking about breastfeeding, but let me tell you, there's a lot of judgment around breastfeeding. And there's a lot of people that don't have a lot of control over how much milk they make, whether it's PCOS or diabetes or blood sugar, preemies, C-sections. There's so many variables that go into whether or not this journey is going to be sort of smooth or it's going to be a struggle. And I mean, you want to talk about judgment. Oh my gosh, it's a minefield.
There could be a whole story night podcast just on feeding babies.
Yeah, there really could be.
Yeah.
And how we think it should be done. But what that did, that experience with Milkies, it really helped me understand from a deep perspective the desire for balance between everybody's sort of their professional lives and their desire to make an impact themselves in the world, but also take care of their families. And
which is making an impact in the world.
Yeah, which is making an impact in the world.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that when we help a mom have that balance between I can provide for my family and I'm confident in my ability to go into the world and earn enough to be able to give my child the things that I think they should have. And I also need to be there for my child physically. That's to me what Hello Care, that's a big part of what we do, is understanding that that's what we all want.
Yeah.
And then if you have to choose between your job and your child is going to win every time, and it should, and that's right. So if we want to be a conscientious employer of parents, we need to understand that our role is to provide an opportunity for someone to have financial stability, but not to interfere with that time that someone wants to be with their kiddos.
So well said. It seems like you really have taken all of these life lessons and they just keep propelling you further and further, and being able to make even more of a difference for the community and your family. And so you had this time with Milkies, but then now you've got a different business,
right?
That you Hello Care, right? So when did that transition happen?
That was kind of a tough transition, Jessica.
Transitions usually are.
Transitions are tough. I learned a lot. Let me tell you. So in Milkies, it was very wonderful for about 5 years. And what I realized was once Milky's started becoming a business where I was actually getting a paycheck, and it does take a while for those of you that are considering entrepreneurship, like have some money saved up because it takes a while, that sort of the early dysfunction of my family raised its head because my mom was an early investor in my company. So she and I owned the business together. And, you know, I had a husband and I had three kids and I had this life that I had built that I was really proud of. Mm-hmm. And what was going on in the background was that I had a brother and sister who did not have that same type of lifestyle, that had not, you know, kind of in and out of contact with law enforcement, drugs, rehab, different things like that. And my mom, as my business partner, became really sympathetic to wanting to help them, which I completely understand. I completely understand. But it was at the expense of what we had built together. So this is a gray area. There's a lot of...
It's messy.
It's messiness.
I mean, people say don't combine, you know, friends, family with business. And yet there's beauty in doing that, but it's also complicated.
It's very complicated. And what I say now is that please, if you're... And I have two wonderful business partners now. So I am pro business partner all the way. But I say, take a look at the other people in their lives. So your business partner isn't going to be the only one that's making decisions about your company. Do they have a spouse? Do they have adult children? Do they have other people that are going to be kind of influencing them one way or the other? Sure. And to be mindful of those influences.
Kind of like when you get married, people say you marry the family,
yes.
You know, not just one person. There's a whole family that comes with.
There's a whole family. Exactly.
Same and it's with business partner.
Same with a business partner. And so that became something that was really complicated because this is my family and I love them, but I also had a business that was supporting my family, and based on their track record of performance and unreliability, I didn't want them to become owners of that company. I welcome them to work there. I welcome them to be employees, but I can't give you ownership. Because that gives you the ability to take this thing that I've carefully built and just drive it right into the ditch. And I just didn't feel comfortable with that. And that was not an answer that anybody could live with in my family. They all felt that that was very selfish of me, that I, you know, with the stability that I had built for myself with my family and my husband, that people that had a lot less stability and a lot less in their lives deserved to be just given things. And I just didn't feel comfortable with that. Even now at Hello Care, there's no one that has the right to damage our team. Even me, I say there are no sacred cows. And that's me. I'm not a sacred cow either. If the time comes when I'm not the right person to be in my role, then a new person needs to come and be in my role. Because the most important thing is that the idea continues. And if your idea is benefiting the world and benefiting people, then that's the right decision to make. That it's not about the person, right? It's about the project continuing and doing good things.
And so with your current work, your mm-hmm. current business, you started Hello Care.
Mm-hmm.
And just as we're kind of starting to wrap up the episode, mm-hmm. what is it that you're doing, and kind of maybe tell a little bit about life today and your work today?
Yeah. Well, my work today is 24/7, but I love it. And we have a great team. So what we do is we hire really wonderful people for our team that just have a heart for caregiving. And then we take really good care of them. We give them good compensation, 401k, interest-free payday loans, everything that we have kind of studied and realized can really make a difference in the life of one of our staff. We try to provide that. And by doing that, we feel that people can offer their best when they go into a home and care for a senior or care for a family. We are in a lot of homes with people that have dementia or at the end of their lives. And those situations require people that are in the right headspace, that feel calm and feel cared for. And if we can do that as part of our team, as part of our culture, to listen, to have that empathy for everyone on our team, and we have seen that it creates a space for people to really be able to care for people in their homes and do it really well and with a lot of compassion. It kind of goes back to what I think I learned from my Milky's days. We really need to support families and support women. And when we do that, we are kind of helping raise the next generation with more stability and more optimism that the world is full of opportunities. And so I feel like that's kind of a lot of what our mission is right now. And our model is working. We're going into new areas and we're finding that there's a lot of word of mouth about HelloCare and that caregivers are sharing the good experience that they have with us on our team, with their friends and their family. And so we have a lot of, you know, cousins and moms and daughters and friends on our team, which is such a compliment to be trusted with a new person, you know, that is coming to you saying, hey, I heard this is a great place to work and you provide great care and great training. And we always want our caregivers to be their authentic selves and asking for that every day. Because I, as Helen, am going to care for somebody different than you, as Jessica, are going to care for somebody. And sometimes my care is going to resonate and sometimes yours is going to resonate. So we want our caregivers to be able to, you know, go into a home and really think about, from my perspective, you know, how can I listen? How can I provide that empathy? And if we've provided that and done things right on our end, then they're ready to do that. They're ready to provide that empathy because we've shown it to them.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of the phrase on the negative side that hurt people hurt people. And this is the flip. This is the positive. Cared for people, care for people. And when you have that love and empathy and respect and safety and security, all those things, it's so much easier to just pay that forward and offer that to your clients who are, my gosh, I mean, there's so many sad stories out there of senior care or dementia care or nursing care, at home care that don't go well. And it is heartbreaking and tragic. And so it's so reassuring. It's so uplifting to hear what you're doing. And I know you're a blessing to so many of those families. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for telling your story and opening up parts of your story that you said had never really even been shared before. So thank you for trusting us with that. Ladies, I hope you found some encouragement in this episode. And before we close, Helen, were there any final just words of encouragement you wanted to give to any ladies listening?
There's a poem that I really love, and I'll just share the first line with you. But it starts out, "Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing." And the reason this resonates with me is that, like a lot of people, almost everybody in this world, I've known sorrow and loss. And now only kindness makes sense anymore to me. And that we have to be almost radical in our kindness and have this energy in our kindness, because we're kind of inviting people to see the best in us and see the best in the world when we show them unabashedly to each other that I support you and I'm happy when things go right for you. And I think that that's what I've learned in my life now through a lot of different experiences, is that I want to be somebody that people come to when they have good news to share, because they know that I am going to be over the moon happy for them. And if you have bad news to share, you can also come to me and I will listen. I will be a listening ear. But I want to say that active celebration of each other and of things that are going right in each other's lives, I think we need to do that with so much energy so that there's no question if we're happy for someone. There's no question if they're celebrating with us. Make it really, really clear.
And authentic,
Authentic, yes.
right? I love what you said, and I think community makes all the difference. Finding your tribe, knowing that you're not alone. And that's what we try and do with Story Night, with this podcast. And we also do it with live events. And so, ladies listening, I want to make sure that you know that if you are within driving distance of McMinnville, Oregon, that you can come to our live events. We try and have three or four a year. You can find the most up-to-date information on our website at storynighthope.com. So, coming up in just a few weeks on Thursday, May 15th, we have our next live event, and this is free, but you do need to register if you want to get a spot, because I have a feeling the Grand Ballroom on 3rd Street is going to fill up rather quickly. You don't want to miss this. Bethany Palacios is going to be sharing her story. She started her life as an orphan in Liberia. She is now Miss Black Oregon and has a very inspirational story to share with all of you. And fun fact in closing, Helen here, as I just learned, has a bit of an understanding of pageant life because you wore a crown in the pageant world.
Yes, that's right. I was Mrs. Oregon 2016 and I competed at Mrs. America. And so it was, yeah, a really fun
That's amazing.
experience. And if anybody's interested in competing in pageants, it's actually full of really wonderful women that want to support each other and are kind of living their best lives out loud. So check it out if you're interested.
That's so awesome. And if you're like, what is this pageant world? Or maybe you only have, I don't know, preconceived notions about pageantry, then you really do want to come hear Bethany tell her story. And she's gonna, pull back the curtain and we get to see a little bit of what that's like.
Can't
So
wait.
I know you'll get to be there, right?
Yes, I'll be
So,
there.
ladies, you get to meet Helen in person. If
Thank
you come join us. We would love to have you there. We'll save you a seat at our table. Thank you again, Helen, for sharing your story. Thank you, ladies, so much for tuning in to this episode. Hopefully, you come back and join us for the rest of this podcast adventure. We do want to thank State Representative Lucetta Elmer for providing the platform for Story Night so that we can continue to bring you real stories from real women of real hope. Thank you for tuning into this episode. We hope you were blessed and encouraged, and come back next time for our next story. Until then, ladies, remember, you have a story, and your story matters, and you are not alone.